Good morning, everyone.
Morning, Charles.
Morning, my friends. The coveted 7:30 start time. This is ungodly. Who thought of this anyway? Anyhow. Once again, or by way of reintroduction, I'm Charles Hamilton, and I'm the Municipal Insurance Association's representative on the LGLA board. On behalf of the LGLA board and all of us here today, I'd like to thank MIA and the BC Assessment Authority for sponsoring our breakfast and for their longstanding and ongoing support of the Leadership Academy. We'll begin this morning's partner agency clinics with a presentation by the Municipal Insurance Association of BC. The MIABC is a reciprocal insurance exchange licensed to provide liability insurance to BC local governments and more recently property insurance as well. Founded in 1987 with 144 subscribers, it provides coverage to 172 members representing 90% of the local governments in British Columbia. Our presenter this morning is Tom Barnes, who has been the Chief Executive Officer and General Counsel for the Municipal Insurance Association since 2005. Tom is a BC native who was educated at the College of New Caledonia in Prince George, as well as the University of British Columbia, where he graduated with a law degree in 1978. He spent more than 10 years at one of BC's leading insurance law firms. His practice focused on the field of civil litigation, concentrating primarily in the defense of municipalities and construction design consultants. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to Tom Barnes, CEO of the MIABC. Welcome, Tom.
Oh, that's very polite of you. Some applause before I start speaking. Don't worry, I don't have a PowerPoint, so you can still focus on your food. I think I want to just do a couple preliminary things. First of all, I will explain to you why this is like the 15th year, I guess about the fifth year in a row, I've got to be the first breakfast speaker at the LGLA on the Friday morning after, as we can see from the empty seats, a lot of your colleagues were out being collaborative last night. The reason that I am here is because the Municipal Assurance Association is basically a municipal or local government service organization is involved in lots of ways in your organization that you're probably not quite aware of. But one of the things we are is a partner with a lot of other municipal service organizations, and what amongst those is the LGLA. And we were one of the founding partners and sponsors of the LGLA, so they feel obligated when they have a gathering to ask us if we would like to donate some more money to sponsor the gathering. And as a founding partner, we feel obligated to say, sure. And then they feel obligated to give us an opportunity to talk to you. And then they realize that they're bringing in a lawyer to talk to you about insurance, and they're trying to figure out some way to fit that into the program. And every year they always go, I know, the Friday morning breakfast. We can slide them into the Friday morning breakfast. So here I am at your Friday morning breakfast. It's funny, it's so close to the best meal of the week, isn't it? Like Friday lunch, that's the best meal of the entire week, right? Because you're having lunch on Friday, and it's a little pause at a work day where you can think about the weekend that starts in a couple hours, and it's all in front of you. But Friday morning breakfast, especially after a collaborative Thursday night's a little bit different. So thank you very much for being here to humor both organizations. Before we get started, there's one other thing. Is there a mayor in the room? I don't need to know where you're from or who you are. It's just I'm giving cover for, okay, good. Because the day before yesterday, I was talking to a CFO, one of our members who will remain nameless, and they have asked me to come and talk to their council. It's something we do a lot. Last year, I or members of my organization spoke to 48 different local government councils and regional district boards. And that represents less than a quarter of our membership. But it's important for us and for you to understand that you have an insurance partner. In fact, nobody told you. A lot of you got elected for the first time just over a year ago. Are anybody here in their second year on council? Oh, good. The rest are out collaborating. But, you know, everybody has their agenda, their thing they want to do when they run for council to help their community. And they get on council and they fight out all sorts of things. But something nobody tells you is when you get on council that you own your own insurance company. And when you think about it, I mean, a lot of you are just probably going through your strategic plan revisions that you started last year, and you're figuring out what you want to do for your community over the next 2 or 3 years. And I can guarantee you that there's almost nothing on your strategic plan that you could do without insurance. And so, you know, your goals for your community are our goals for your community. And people want to know more about that. And so we get invited by your staff to come out and talk to you about some of the organizations that you're part of, so that it gives you another tool to use when you're doing the strategic planning. And so I've been invited to go later this month to speak to one of our members' councils. And they have a new mayor, and over half their council's new, which is a pretty typical story after the last election. And so I said to the CFO, what do you want me to talk about, and how long do I have? Because sometimes we have 10 minutes, sometimes we have 2 hours. So it depends on what you're. And I said, well, I got to speak Friday morning at the LGLA. And is any of your council going to be there? And he says, oh, yeah, a couple of them will be there. Our mayor's going to be there. What time are you speaking? I said, 7:30 Friday morning. And there's this pause, and he goes, Tom, our mayor is not a 7:30 in the morning kind of guy. And so I just asked that question without knowing who or what mayor, what city you're from, so that I could talk to somebody's CFO next week and say, you know what? There was a mayor there at 7:30. It was probably yours. But I am not a 7:30 in the morning kind of guy. Now, the theme of this conference is inclusive leadership that's respectful, collaborative, and engaged. And as you probably, if you've looked at your program, you've probably seen that I have been assigned the theme of talking about climate change, asset management, emergency planning, and addressing that in a way that tells you how we need to tackle those issues in a collaborative fashion. And you're probably wondering, what the heck does this guy from an insurance company know about tackling these serious long-term problems from a collaborative point of view? But that's what we've been doing for 30 years. Your insurance company, we are your insurance company, because over 30 years ago, the insurance industry wanted nothing to do with local governments or any government risk. And so what the UBCM did is it got together with its members and it formed its own insurance company just for local governments in BC. That's collaboration. And we've been around for over 30 years. We provide liability insurance for 90% of the local governments of BC. We provide all the insurance for about a third of all the local governments of BC. And that's collaboration. And in fact, it's such a critically important kind of collaboration that 30 years ago, the insurance market didn't just affect BC, it affected everywhere. And all over North America, government entities had to form their own insurance companies. They call that kind of collaboration a pool. And today, 30 years later, the insurance industry would love to insure municipalities again. Although it's going through another crisis at the moment, and things are pretty expensive, but we leave it to them, because our mandate from our members is to deliver you the insurance coverage you need to do what you want to do for your communities at a stable cost. $12 million, just over that, is what we charged for our liability program. 15 years ago, we charged our members $12.2 million collectively for their liability coverage. In 2019, we charged more members, because we've grown since we started, about $12.4 million for that coverage. That's about a 2.5% increase over 15 years. Not 2.5% a year, 2.5% over 15 years. There's nothing else, I guarantee it, on your budget that has only gone up 2.5% over 15 years. And that's because you're our members and you told us you don't want the volatility in the insurance world, so we have to deliver stability to you. Now, the other thing we deliver is we try to keep our costs as low as we can, but we still have to keep them stable. And the other thing that we deliver that was our original mandate is to deliver risk management services, risk management and loss control services. You see, no matter what municipality wants to be a member of the MIABC, we say, sure, welcome. Whether they're a good risk or a bad risk, because we pool, we collaborate. So our job is to turn everybody into the best risk they could be. This has been a very successful business model, not just for us here in BC, but all over North America. All over North America, there are hundreds of pools, just like the MIABC, that insure government-related entities. In fact, 80% of all government entities in North America receive some sort of coverage from an insurance pool. Who knew? We belong to a couple of organizations of these pools. One's sponsored by the National League of Cities in the US. That's their version of the FCM. The other one is called the Association of Governmental Risk Pools, which consists of hundreds of these government pools. And in 2019, AGRIP members collected from their government entities over $22 billion in insurance premium. That's part of the movement that you're part of. And you never even had a clue about it, did you? You be honest, you never thought it was that big a deal that when you got your insurance invoice that you were part of that and you were part of that bigger collaboration. $22 billion, that's US. What is that, like 160 Canadian or something? It's a big, successful organization, and the insurance industry has spent 30 years with its face pressed up against the window trying to get back into that market it abandoned in the mid-80s. So we do that, and we do our risk management to try to keep our costs stable. It's critical. Our risk management affects every aspect of your services that you provide. Your staff are on the phone or emailing us on a daily basis, trying to figure out how to do what you want it to do in a way that keeps risk within your risk appetite. And the reason we do that isn't to save money, isn't to tell you not to do what you think is right for your community. It's because it's the right thing to do. It's hard when you're doing all this long-term stuff like risk management and telling people to do their jobs differently to keep your eye on the ball, which is serving your community. And is it worth it? How do we go back and keep track of the claims that didn't happen? Well, we don't. We don't know how to do that. But we don't do it for any other reason than, you know, my colleague in Minnesota, a guy named Dan Greenschwig, has a great way of putting it. I saw him speak at a conference a couple of years ago, and where he says, we don't do risk management to save money. We do it because it's our moral obligation to our communities. We do not want people using our aquatic centers or walking down the sidewalk or getting involved in any other local government program or getting hurt, suffering property damage or having their business interrupted. It's not because we want to avoid a lawsuit, it's because we don't want the members of our community having to deal with that. And so that's what our risk management program does. It has gotten into over the, you know what the largest gathering of municipal staff in BC is every year? Elected officials, it's the UBCM conference. What is the largest gathering of local government staff every year? It's the MIABC Risk Management Conference. Last year, there were over 350 local government staff from all departments and all levels of your organization gathered to collaborate with each other about how to provide those services to their communities in a way that met your strategic goals. And that conference is so well respected and well known, we have people from all over Canada and the US attend every year. And you never even knew about that, did you? Well, I always tell people about insurance pooling, governmental insurance, but it's the greatest example of government cooperation that you've never heard of. And it's the most successful example. So that's why we get asked to talk about collaboration. We are doing it, we live it, we've done it for years, and we specialize in nothing but local governments. So let's go from that into the question of leadership, inclusive leadership. What the heck does that mean? Well, I got to start by telling you a personal story about leadership, because it's something I've had to think about the last couple of weeks. It's going to sound like I'm bragging, but I'm not. So let me get to the second paragraph before you judge me, okay? A few weeks ago, I was notified by AGRIP, the big organization, that next month in Orlando, they're going to give me a leadership award. That's I thought, interesting. It basically it tells you the station of life I'm at, right? That's people telling you, you've been around a long time, maybe you should start, here's an award, no. So what got me thinking about leadership was how that felt, because my staff obviously had nominated me for it, and when they found out I got it, they're all waiting for me to do something, and I didn't do anything, because I had mixed feelings about it. And I had to sort it out, because honestly, I was gratified. Come on, you do a job for 15 years and somebody gives you a word, there is some satisfaction there. But I was kind of humbled, too, because I know Dan Greenswig and a bunch of these other people that do great jobs running organizations like this. And for me to get an award and them not, it kind of puts me in my place. But I think the thing that I feel the most about it, in all honesty, is it's a bit embarrassing. Because that's not what I view leadership as. Leadership it's not about getting people to follow you through the force of your personality or because the authority of your office demands that they do what you tell them to do. You don't establish a successful organization by issuing memos or sending out tweets. It's not how organizations succeed. Leadership that make organizations succeed and progress, leadership is what takes a group of people and turns them into a functioning team. And teams don't function because of you, the leader. They function because of themselves. Every team, your team, whatever, you're all on part bunch of teams. Those teams work because there's leadership being shown by all those team members to each other as they work every day on big things and small things. And you get those all together, and that's how organizations succeed. Yeah, Helen Keller put it this way. She said, alone we can do so little, and together we can do so much. And that's the power of collaboration. And so the reason that I feel just a little bit embarrassed about getting this leadership award is because I think I'm being rewarded for the leadership that the members of our team have shown. And that it's a team award, it's not an individual award. So That's my view of what leadership is. And I don't think I'd have a lot of debate here about that. So that's what we're talking. Now, how do we take leadership and make it inclusive? What does inclusive mean? When we see pools work, there are three things that you need to make a pool function, just from a business point of view. You have to have a pool of risks that are analogous. They have to have a lot in common, like local government risks. They're not all identical, but they're analogous. But those risks have to be diverse. They have to be diverse in terms of type and size and geography. And then the losses that you're insuring can't be correlated. And you'll see diversity as part of that. Well, it's the same thing with any sort of an organization working and decision making. I got a good lesson in this from a risk management point of view from a Lufthansa pilot. I don't hang around with pilots, but we were staying at the same B&B at Whistler a few years ago. And we were talking about it, and we're talking about risk management, because that's what I do. And airlines, of course, are famous for their risk management. They got all these risk management tools because failures, when you're flying an airliner full of people, there's no minor accidents up there. And what she told me, what they were trained as, and it was unusual because, of course, Lufthansa is a German company, but they used the Swiss analogy. They talk about Swiss cheese. Because in every organization, every time you have a function or a decision to be made by a human being, you've entered into the equation the fact that the human being is going to make a mistake from time to time, because that's what we are. And when you're making Swiss cheese, those mistakes appear in the form of a hole in the Swiss cheese. And so what you do from a risk management point of view is you have systems to try and minimize those. You have backup systems so that if somebody makes a mistake, somebody else is supposed to do a job to cover up for that. And that works great unless those mistakes wind up getting the holes in the Swiss cheese lined up. And that happens too much and you have a disaster on your hands. So that is an example of diversity, diverse decision-making, diverse interactions, making for a better system. It's the same in our management team. I'm a lawyer. I used to do litigation. I've got two other lawyers on my management team. I mean, we're quick thinkers. We see the big picture. We get the direction we want to go, and we get excited, and we want to go there. The only problem with that is we're the same personalities. We got the same blind spots. We could get ourselves revved up to go there. But we have other people on our team. We have Sherman, our claims manager. Sherman's very process-driven. He likes the rules. He likes principles. So somebody gets a big idea. Sherman wants to sort out how this fits in with the rest of the process we've got. We've got a CFO, Maria. She wants, it's numbers. It's got to be on a spreadsheet. She wants to see what the details are, sometimes even before we're ready to talk about the details. And we got Glenn, who worked in local government for 30 years, and he has a matrix for everything, and he wants to see all the options and what's right. And, as frustrating as it is for us lawyers to be slowed down by these detail-oriented people, it's just as frustrating for them to be sped up by these lawyers that don't have time for the details. But we work it all together, and we make better kinds of decisions. And that is a diverse decision-making process, and it's diverse leadership. When we talk about diversity, we're talking about two different concepts. One is what we call cognitive diversity, and that's what we have on our management team. And you probably have it on your council, and you undoubtedly do. You have people that approach problems differently, and they think differently. And as a result of that, when you work together, you get these different perspectives, and you're undoubtedly going to come up with better decisions. So the other kind of diversity, which we usually think about when we talk about diversity, is demographic diversity. And how do we take demographic diversity and include that in our leadership in a way to make better decisions. That's a bit of a challenge, but it shouldn't be, because it's exactly the same as cognitive diversity. I mean, look, let's start with me. Look at me. You could tell a lot from me just standing up here, right? As Miriam, our chief risk officer, would say, I represent the pale, male, and stale demographic. That's who I am, and good, bad, or different, that's what I bring to everything. But in addition to that, I grew up in small towns in BC, resource-based communities. The town I was born in, the mill closed, and the town's really not there anymore. That background I bring with me as well. I went to University of BC. I went to high school in the US. I practiced law. All those things. You cannot go to a law school without coming out without your cognitive processes being damaged. And I bring that with me to every decision I make. Now, we're going through this with our board, law firms are going through it, is we've got a certain demographic, mine, that tends to be overrepresented in leadership positions now. There's a ton of reasons for that. We're not here to discuss whether that's good, bad, or indifferent. The point is, if we have more demographic diversity in our leadership positions, we will be approaching problems differently. I mean, honestly, somebody of my demographic, I've worked and learned and I've studied and all that, and I've achieved what I've achieved, and I'm quite content with my life. And now, I may not have had doors open for me throughout my life because I'm a white guy. But I can assure you, I don't believe I've ever had a door close for me just because of the way I look or where I'm from. And if I had, and there's lots of people in our society who have experienced that, if I had experienced that, it would have completely changed my approach and my outlook when it comes to lots of things. And that's why we need to make sure we're including other demographics in our decision making. So, how do we take all that and talk about climate change? Well, I'll first tell you, why are we, the MIABC, involved in climate change? Well, we're part of an effort that the Ministry of Environment started a couple of years called the Green Communities Committee, trying to work out ways to help local governments all over the province adapt and build resilience to climate change. That's important. We are a founding partner of Asset Management BC, where we are working with them, because risk management is a critical part of asset management, and without managing your assets, you're not managing your infrastructure, and without your infrastructure, you don't have any services to provide to your community. So we're part of that. Emergency planning. It's the one thing that our member organizations say they wish they had more help about was emergency planning. Emergency Management BC has just got our discussion paper out about revising their statute. And we've been meeting with them because we have some expertise that they want to know about. Earthquakes. How are we going to fund an earthquake? I know you think, oh, that's no problem. When the big one hits, the province will step in. Well, then why is the province worried about it? Because the province should be saying, that's no problem. When the big one happens, the feds will step in. But why are the feds worried about it? There's tons of unfunded liabilities that are being carried on your books right now that you don't even know about that are going to be brought to bear if an earthquake happens. So, financing these risks, that's what our expertise is in. You know, you think the biggest cities in the province wouldn't need to worry about collaborating? 2 weeks ago, I had a meeting at their request with the risk managers from Vancouver and Surrey, our two biggest cities. Number one thing that they were concerned about is they've got tons of assets. And you start modeling what an earthquake does to them, it's a big problem. And we have expertise, we have access to global reinsurers, and we're collaborating with them. Not because they're members of the MIA, but our mission is to use our expertise to help communities in BC do what they want to do for their members. So, what is it that all these things have in common? They are all long-term threats that are going to manifest themselves at some point, and they are going to negatively impact in a significant way your community. Secondly, the steps that have to be taken to build resilience and to mitigate these threats, to plan for them, are long-term things that have to be done now. We can't, and the third thing is, a lot of the steps that need to be taken to address any one of these things are the same steps that need to be taken to address some of the other ones. That's why they're in that package. These are long-term things we gotta be dealing with now. And lots of times I have CFOs say, I know about that. But I go to council with something where we increase our infrastructure spending. The pushback I get is, well, is the water system gonna fail before the end of the fiscal year? Is the earthquake going to happen before the next election? Are we going to get wildfires here next year? So the message, you know, it's funny. I was telling Charles, every year I get to do the breakfast talk. And I am. Well, you know, it's funny. I have a management meeting of people. My managers will come up to me and say, so you're doing the LGLA this year? Yeah. What's your speaking time? I got the Friday breakfast. Do you need anybody to go and talk with you? No. I'm fine, I got it. Okay, well, just make sure you mention this to them. And then they know that they don't have to join me in Richmond first thing on a Friday morning in February. But what they are looking for and what your staff is looking for is you. They need you to tell them that these long-term threats are your priority. Because if it's not your priority, nothing is going to get done. If all you want to do is reduce your tax rates, are we going to be able to deal with these things? That's what everybody's looking for. And the other thing that I hear from your staff and the government, and my managers, is for some reason, the only thing that's sexy in the eyes of the elected officials is climate change. They're all wanting to do something about climate change. How do we get them to take the same gleam in their eye and excitement and look at these other massive problems they need to do the same thing with? How do we get them to know that you need to plan for an emergency before you have it? You need to have money in the bank before the earthquake hits. You need to have a system for cataloging and replacing and keeping your assets up to date. How do we get them to have that same attitude that they have for climate change? And the only thing they could think of was to send me to talk to you at breakfast on a Friday morning. So if that's the one thing we get out of this, just humor me that far that you've got, oh, I can see a link between that. Now, there's just one other thing I want to talk about before I turn this venue over to the people that will help you with your taxes, the BC Assessment Authority. See, the BC Assessment, they get to do the Friday morning breakfast too, because like us, they're also a municipal service organization that was formed by the UBCM. They were also a founding partner of the LGLA, so they have the opportunity to sponsor this every day. And like us, they can't think of a place better than breakfast on Friday that you could hear from them. So we're good sports about that. But I just wanted to talk about our Indigenous communities before I quit. Because that's part of the inclusiveness and the demographic diversity And the cognitive diversity that we need to tackle these big problems. I mean, these problems, they gotta be done collaboratively. When you got the two biggest cities in the province that can't handle it on their own, there's no other way to go about it. And I just wanted to say, in terms of our Indigenous communities, we're working through the truth and reconciliation process. And we would love to be better at it. And in all honesty, if you ask me what the MIABC could do to assist this process, I have to tell you, I don't know. I don't know. I'd love to talk to members of our Indigenous communities. I mean, yeah, we provide insurance to initiatives. Lots of you are working collaboratively with your Indigenous communities, and we provide insurance coverage for those activities. It's just part of your basic package. Is that enough? Kind of hard to think that it is, but what else can we do? I don't know. I do suspect strongly that our Indigenous communities don't need another guy of my demographics to walk into the room and tell them what they should do, but we're quite happy to listen. But, you know, we get periodically, every once or twice a year, I'll get a call from the Attorney General's Department or from a law firm that's working with an Indigenous community, and they want to know whether we insure the Indigenous self-government organizations that are springing up, but we don't. I've taken it to my board a couple of times, and the board gets concerned that the risks that are associated with that are not analogous with the risks that are associated with our members. And so, since analogous risks are a critical part of making a pool succeed, we haven't taken that step. I'd be happy to look at that again, but what I usually do when I'm called that, I say, you know, there is a pool. There's a collaborative pool called Amerind. It's based in New Mexico. Why is it called Amerind? Because down there they call their indigenous peoples American Indians. So they took that. See, Amerind. And what they do is they're a pool of indigenous communities in the U.S., nationwide. And I've often said to the people that call, why don't you give Amerind a call? And let the indigenous communities work together with other communities and address these. And if there's something we could do, we'd be happy to do it. But that's something we have to keep working on. We can't just let it become some rote thing we cover whenever we gather together. But there's another important reason why we need to evolve our indigenous communities in addressing these big problems. And that's because the one thing they've shown us is they take a long-term view of things. They are patient, maybe too patient. They've had to wait and plug away at chronic problems that affect their communities for generations. And perhaps that perspective is critically important for you in addressing these chronic long-term problems that are going to affect your communities. So my last message before I turn you over to the assessment authority is that we have to approach these problems in a collaborative and inclusive fashion. And that inclusivity has to include our indigenous communities. Not because the law says it should, but it does. And not because it's the right thing to do, but it is. But because that's the best way for all of us to work together to address these problems. And I'm gonna leave you with this thought from Henry Ford. He said, who's not somebody I quote that very much, because there was a lot of things about that fellow that I don't endorse, but he did come up with the odd good quote. He may have had a good speechwriter, but he said, coming together is a beginning. Keeping together is progress. But working together, that is success. And that's what we could do working all together on these big problems. So I haven't even looked at my watch. Am I too far over time? Or Oh, good. Charles says I'm fine, so I got to stop now because he does my performance review. So thank you very much. I got to hang around and grab some breakfast. If you have any questions or anything, just feel free to come up and ask. And hopefully when I get invited by your staff to come and talk to your counselor board, you'll remember this. And it will be at some, maybe it'll be a Friday lunch discussion. Thank you.